to the second hour of We the People Radio. We are airing live on March 29th, 2020, but I'm sure we'll play the show again at some other time, so just enjoy it whenever you're listening to it. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. Pape Machinery is our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. They handle everything tractors, ag, and turf related. Go by and see them. And also pick up a Honda generator while you're there. They got lots on hand, and that season is right around
it's
the corner.
Fast approaching.
That's right. You're going to need one. So go by and see them, or give them a call at 226-9226, or get them on the web at pappymachinery.com.
And there you have it. So you can find everything about the program with 10 years of archives that are free for you to use as you like. They're commercial free and posted in an MP3 format for you to listen to or send to a friend or do whatever you want with. And that is at wethepeopleradio.us. Okay, without further ado, we're going to move on to Sean Flanagan, which is kind of exciting. We're going to talk about something that, well, yet again, I mean, this isn't actually new information. Bill and I know nothing about this. We always bring on somebody we...
Well, I was just reading up on it last night.
You're a veritable expert. So, Sean Flanagan is the director of the Center for Metrics, which already it's like, what?
What?
Yes. And he talks about the United States Prosperity Index. Oh, back in the game again. So first comprehensive assessment of all aspects of prosperity across America and how this has changed over time. Pretty interesting. I didn't know anybody was actually doing this. And he has a lot of years working in the UK in their government on statistical matters. And so obviously very well qualified to tell us all about this, and we'll just be listening. We'll be here silently listening. Sean, how's it going?
Hi, Aaron. Very well. Hi, Bill. Great to be on. Thanks.
Hi, Sean.
Me.
Thanks for being on. We appreciate it.
So we'll just follow along. How would you like to start this whole thing?
Well, it might be helpful if I just sort of give a bit of a background about who we are. What on earth are we doing, doing a study on the U.S., which might be in some of your listeners' minds?
Sure, that's
great. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Is that a good start? Okay, so I'm based at the Lagarfin Institute. We're a global think tank based in London. Our mission, if you like, is to help create the pathways from poverty to prosperity. We've been in existence for about 13, 14 years. And we want to help create those pathways so that nations and others can move from sort of poverty to prosperity. But when we talk about prosperity, I think there's often different definitions of prosperity, so it might be worthwhile just clarifying what we mean. We mean really a combination of both economic and social well-being. I think often prosperity can just be thought of in terms of wealth, but we think for a life to truly flourish, you need a combination of economic and social well-being. And we, at the Institute, have therefore been measuring and tracking prosperity across the globe for the past 13 years, using our Global Prosperity Index. So we take in that global index, we take about 299 indicators, and we create a very holistic measure of economic and social well-being. And when we look at the U.S. in that index, what we find is the U.S. performs particularly well, as you'd expect, on the economic aspects of the index. It's fourth overall in the globe on the economic aspects. But when we look at the other two domains, as we call them, we've got three domains in the index. Open economies is the first one. Second one is inclusive societies. And the third is empowered people. On the other two domains, inclusive societies and empowered people, the U.S. ranks 21st and 27th,
wow,
respectively. And that, therefore, when you look at overall prosperity in the U.S., it ranks 18th. Globally, which is still pretty high. The UK, I think, is at 11, so, you know, they're not too far apart. But there is something interesting around the sort of social well-being aspect that we wanted to understand in a bit more depth, which led us to do the study of the US, of the 50 states, and of DC in the United States Prosperity Index.
Well, I think people always, when they think of prosperity, they think of bank account. You know, bank account and money. So
yes.
I think your index is much more valid because...
Yeah, it takes into account more than just... Yeah, because...
It's what our parents always told us. Money doesn't make you happy.
Yeah, I think I'm prosperous, but Warren Buffett would probably starve on my budget. But so it's not all about the money.
And I'm curious now with all this global pandemic and businesses being closed everywhere and all that, does this sort of render a lot of your information somewhat obsolete, or is it a good predictor for the future?
I think, it's a very good point there, and I think with the index, we're curating, if you like, data sources that are available within the U.S. So we've used all the data that's already published in the U.S. and brought that together into this index. So obviously that data is backward-looking. It looks at how things have been, and so the index, as we have it, and we'll be doing an update this summer, and we're for the first time also going from a state index to a county index for a number of states, and California is one of those states where we're going to be doing a deep dive into looking at the counties, because we're well aware, if you take the whole of the U.S. and then break that in into states, you'll see the disparities. But then if you take a state, particularly a large one like California, we know that when you unpack that, you'll see disparities in areas of high prosperity and areas of lower prosperity. So that's also publishing this summer. But to your point, absolutely, the index is very much looking using data to see how things have been and where we are now. Obviously, we are currently very live in this global pandemic, and that is going to have a big impact on many aspects of the index. So as we go forward and track that, we will absolutely see those things beginning to be reflected in the index. But we can also use it a little bit, particularly like the global one. We are looking at the sort of strength of healthcare systems in the index, and are we seeing certain nations being able to be more resilient, perhaps, and deal better with the COVID-19 than others. And when we look at likes of South Korea and Singapore, they seem to have actually been more resilient and not had the sort of impact that others are having. And in, another interesting one at the moment in Europe for us is Germany, which again is seeing far less than cases and also deaths than perhaps many other European countries. Again, it's interesting to try and understand. But these, as I'm sure you're aware, are very, very complex issues, and there's many, many factors that lead into what we're witnessing in individual countries at the moment. The index is exactly backward-looking, but it can help inform a little bit how some nations might be able to or may respond.
So what are, probably the list is too long, but what are some of the criteria that you measure to come up with the index?
Like, what are things we would never think of? You have 299 options, so...
Well, I think the best way of thinking about it, I find this quite helpful, you might find it helpful too in your listeners, is the index is a bit like a triangle or a pyramid. So at the very pinnacle, at the top, at the apex, you've got what is the overall prosperity of a place, be it a state or a nation. Underneath that, you've then got these three domains, open economies, inclusive societies, and empowered people. Mm-hmm. Underneath that, you've then got, we call the pillars of prosperity. And so in the US, we've got 11. In the global one, we've got 12. Three of those in the US relate to open economy. So that's, we measure open economies not necessarily just by the strength of output, but also what is the environment like for investment, for entrepreneurial activity, for investor protections, labor market flexibility. We then also look at the quality of the infrastructure, so that supports trade, enables trade. So that would be around communications, transport, resources. And the final part of the economic aspect is the economic quality. That is, how well prepared is a state to generate wealth sustainably?
And do you use the same ones for every country? Are they all the same?
Yes. What we did with the U.S. is we did an exercise last year where we looked at our global one, and what we want to do with both the global and the U.S. one is it to be informative for policymakers, to really help them set their agendas. So we went back to basics a little bit and re-refined the index so it had these policy-focused elements. So, as I mentioned, you've got overall prosperity, you've got these three domains, you've got these 11 pillars of prosperity, and then underneath that in the US, you've got these 48 policy-focused elements. So they're really designed for policymakers to be able to see where perhaps they need to invest resources or where they're doing really well and to continue that strength. So a good example is if we look at education, we've broken down education into different stages of education because we believe that's helpful. So if you look at pre-primary, primary, high secondary, sort of high school, and then tertiary. But then within that, we've looked at, well, what's the enrollment rate, what's the graduation rate, and what's the quality of the education that, that pupils are receiving through things like using
indicators
on test scores.
Fascinating, especially when you break it out by county, because as I'm sure you figured out, California has a huge range. I mean, up where we are, there's a county that's still considered frontier. So we've got heavy, heavy urban, suburban, you've got rural, and then we have frontier. So yeah. you should run the gamut. You picked a good state for that. We have to take a really quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Sean Flanagan. We have a great article posted on the website, American Prosperity Depends on States Being Laboratories of Democracy. And that was written by him and also by Stephen Bryan. You can find it at wethepeopleradio.us. Our guest is Sean Flanagan, the director of for the Center for Metrics at a London-based think tank, which seems very far away. And so how would that impact anybody else? But you know what? This is really interesting. I didn't know anybody was out there. I guess there's always somebody doing something interesting. But we were talking on the break, Sean. We were curious, once you kind of have done your research, do you plug in different policy decisions and give maybe estimations of how that would affect? Is that, or do you just give flat information to policymakers?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think we want to be doing more in the policy space. And my background, and a number of others, including Stephen Bryan, who's the director of policy, spent many years in government here in the UK, and Stephen's worked in other governments around the world. My time in government was very much making sure that ministers and other officials had the right information to make the right policy choices, and then having made those choices, being able to measure and track how effective they were. Were they having the desired effect and impact? So we see the index as being absolutely something that can be used in two ways. One is to help inform the policy agenda. And then the second thing is around also being able to track whether things are getting better as a result of policies that have been put in place. And that's helpful for the general public as well, because they can use this index to help hold government to account. And are, state governors and others, are they living up to the promises perhaps that they've made historically? So it works as both accountability tool, but also a policy-making tool.
That's interesting, and yet again, I think you're going to have a field day in California, because they've made a lot of really dumb decisions, not the least of which, especially now during this particular deal with the virus, they outlawed any private contractors. So, people who would, say, deliver food, people who would, say, do in-home care for the elderly, nurses, traveling nurses that aren't assigned to a particular hospital, they're unable to work in this state because they have to be an employee of a business. They cannot be a contract.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I think you're going to have a really, really good time looking at that data. Tell us, You've already done all 50 states. Have you already finished all this research, or are you kind of in the throes of it?
No, so we did the first publication last year, 2019, U.S. Prosperity Index. So that all of this information, I should say, Aaron and Bill, are freely available on our website, which is usprosperity.net. You've got the report there. You've got an interactive map that gives you a state profile for each of the states and D.C. and that presents everything. That pyramid structure that I talked you through is there for each state. It's in PDF form, and you can really drill down to see where your state is doing well and where it's not doing so well. As I say, full disclosure, we really want this information to be used.
I think it's great. It's really easy to use, too, because the states are all just right there. You just click on them, and off you go.
We've tried. And this year, we're doing a refresh of the state index. That's going to be published in July. We're also designing a more interactive website. And as I mentioned, we're doing a county index for 8 states, one of which is California. The reason why we're only doing 8 is I think there's about 3,140 counties across the U.S., so that's a major undertaking to do it for all. But, if there's interest by others, then that's something that we may be able to do. But we are a charity, so we're reliant on, people to sort of support our work.
Sure.
And so we'll be publishing that in July, which we're excited about as well. So it'll be an update of the state index and the first edition of the county prosperity index.
So with this information, how long will it be before we can tell if prosperity is going up or down in the United States?
Well, at the moment, so when we published the report last year, and we see this in the global index as well, so obviously in the global index, we see the U.S. as a whole, and then in the state index, we see how the 50 states and D.C. contribute to that. So what we've done is we've taken the global taxonomy and said, okay, how does this apply to the U.S.? And we had about 35 to 40 U.S. experts, advisors on this as well. So these are people in the U.S. who are education experts, health experts. We had about 3 or 4 experts per each of the 11 pillars, and they really helped to shape the taxonomy and then also advised us on which indicators we should use as a sort of proxy for capturing that aspect. That demonstrated that prosperity in the U.S. Has been rising and has continued to rise and is its highest ever level. This is when we published last year. Obviously, as a result of what's going on now, not just in the U.S., but across the world, we are undoubtedly going to see the impact of that coming through in the index. But it would probably take a little while to feed through.
Yeah, because that's really going to be, in the big picture, it's almost a false indicator of what's really going on once people go back to work and things,
level out. We find out who made it and who didn't make it.
Right.
Well, it looks like right now that you have in the U.S. anyway, the states that are kind of the most prosperous by your index are really the New England states. They seem to be doing quite well.
Sorry. Yeah. So when you look at the map, predominantly the states that sort of top the index are generally a number of them are in the sort of the northeast up the top. But you do have a number of other states across the U.S. which also do well. So you've got the likes of Washington State, Utah, Colorado, Minnesota as well. But there is a clustering in the sort of northeast,
and you kind of have there's also kind of a clustering in the south as well. Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri, Tennessee, Kentucky are all in the bottom percentile, also with New Mexico and Nevada. I'm surprised about Nevada. Nevada's always, I don't know, seemed like they were always doing really well.
Well, it did see when we look at the change over the past decade, it has actually. It was the 13th most improved state, so it had actually made a number. It had made a number of improvements over the past decade. So it probably does speak to your point around, being improved. But all of these indicators in here that we've curated and pulled together, they're mainly a sort of administrative or objective measures. So things like number of people with health insurance, for example. But we do also try to capture some satisfaction measures as well, because we think they're important, because people's prosperity is not just a sort of direct measure. It is also a measure of how they are feeling about certain aspects of their life. So when we look at mental health, for example, which is one of the health elements We do look at mental health because that is a really important part of overall health.
And how do you measure that? Or where does the data come for that?
So the data on mental health, I'm just going to quickly go to the state profile that I've got, the California one open. So we have a number of measures, and actually mental health was a challenge to do. Not necessarily so much when we looked at the U.S., because I think the U.S., because it's a highly developed nation, has a good understanding of mental health, where it was a particular challenge in the global index, where a lot of nations, for example, they don't. The concept of mental health is not really that well understood.
No, they're busy feeding people. They haven't mastered hunger yet, so they haven't moved on to mental health,
some cases,
I would imagine.
Yes. And often, people who have mental health issues perhaps are just labeled as being, maybe mad or something, and there isn't necessarily that care or support. So trying to capture data accurately is always a challenge, but we really believe that. So in the US, though, for example, we've got in the mental health element, which forms part of the overall health, there are five indicators. So we've got suicide, we've got drug overdose deaths, we've got serious mental illness, we have disability-weighted prevalence from mental illness, which is what's known as the DALYS measure. And then to what I was just talking about then, we have self-reported mental health not good. Now, there's about four different sources that they come from. And so what we do with the index is we at the very lowest level of the pyramid I was talking about earlier, we've got about 215 indicators. Those then cluster together to create these policy-focused elements. Then they're added together to do the pillars, which are added together to domain, added together to do overall prosperity. So the indicators and the elements, we weight. They are weighted. Everything starts off with a weight of one, and then we up or down weight it based on statistical analysis, but also subjective judgment based particularly on drawing upon our experts, our US experts, to get a sense of how important are these things to measuring certain aspects. So that's the mental health. It's made up of those five indicators.
Well, see, and that explains a lot of the bright red states in, like Louisiana came in 50th, and they've had huge problems with the opioid epidemic. So I would imagine that that pulled them down tremendously.
Yes, when we look at the states at the bottom, and also those at the top. Actually, one of the key findings we found, I mentioned one already of the study, is that overall prosperity across the U.S. is continue to rise as in its highest level. We had some macro messages that came out from the study. We had one which was that mental health has seen a deterioration over the past couple of decades, past decade. We had also that, actually I'll pause there because I'll go on to say what I was going to say. So that mental health overall across the U.S. has seen a decline, and particularly because of the increase in the drug overdose death, the opioid death. As you will know better than me, the overall statistics for the U.S. are quite shocking in a way, that sort of 70,000 people a year are dying as a result of this. And that's higher apparently in 1 year, as I understand it, than armed forces personnel died in the whole of the Vietnam War. This is a huge number of people. And we do see that a number of states, in fact, lots of states have seen a deterioration in that particular indicator. But when we look at the southern states, the ones that are towards the bottom of the index,
Hold that thought, Sean. Hold that thought. So before we delve into that, because I don't want to cut you off partway, I'm just going to cut you off now. Sorry. So we have to take a quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Sean Flanagan. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. one back to you. So talk to us about the southern states. You were going to give us some insight there.
Yeah, it was just when we look at the third domain, the empowered people domain, and that's made up of living conditions. So is that, do people have enough to live on? Or, you know, do they have adequate accommodation? Do they have access to sort of water services, those kind of things? And is the environment in which they live safe? So in terms of their work environments, their sort of home environment and things. We then have education, which I've sort of talked to already. Health as well is the other pillar. And then the fourth pillar in empowered people is the natural environment. So that's the extent to which the emission of sort of gases, the quality of the air, and then also the quality of the forest land and soil, and the preservation efforts that are being put in place to try and preserve the, you know, the land, etc., for future generations. So when we look at those four things combined, we actually see that those at the bottom, towards the bottom of the index, they generally perform the poorest on all four of those, and then those at the top of the index generally perform, you know, the best. It's quite interesting when you look at that sort of polarization across. But we don't see that. One of the other key macro findings of the study was we don't see that across the board. So if you look at our global index, those at the top of the index generally perform well on all 12 pillars, and those at the bottom generally perform, you know, poorly on all 12 pillars. When we look at the US, that's not the case, and that's one of the things that led us to that, you know, this idea that that sense that the states are laboratories of democracy, because every single state has an opportunity to improve in one or more pillars, irrespective of where they land in the rankings table. And that creates this opportunity for where one state is perhaps not performing as well, another state that's performing stronger. Is there an opportunity for shared learning there? So can they look to see what that state doing, and could they perhaps replicate that or do something similar to help improve their, you know, score, their prosperity in that particular area?
Do you also highlight things they should stop doing?
Well, I think we're wrestling a little bit with the color coding that we use in the index, because we're quite aware that this sort of idea of green to red, you know, sort of indicating sort of warning, danger kind of thing is perhaps sometimes a little bit misinterpreted. But what we're trying to do there is to sort of showcase where things are being done well and where things, you know, areas that could improve. And, you know, we can all improve on something. And I think through what the index helps shows is where each state is, where they're not doing so well and where could improvement, you know, be made. And that's what we want the index to be used for.
I think that's a great idea. And so I'm curious, so as you move from, say, the United States to Canada or to another country, do you do this for a bunch of other countries?
We're doing it for Africa at the moment. As I mentioned earlier, we're a charity, and so we have our core funding, which has always funded our Global Prosperity Index, and that's something that we do every year, and we use that index to go and work with nations, and we are working with, you know, some nations at the moment where we're just trying to help them take the index and apply it to help, you know, improve and move forward. The US work was actually funded by an organization called the Helmsley Charitable Trust. So they're sort of in South Dakota, and their interest is mainly health. They do a lot of work on health, and when they first approached us, they were mainly interested in doing some form of health index. But as we had a conversation with them, I think we talked through the aspects that many things impact health outcomes. So social determinants of health, so often living conditions, their environment, their education, their material resources, all of those things can impact health. And so as we carried on the conversation, they actually felt that it would be better for us to do a prosperity index. And when we looked across what was in the US already, and there's obviously a huge amount of data and information in the US, we found that there were many indexes on economic prosperity. You know, you've got rich states, poor states, and you look at the social aspects, you've got the social progress index. But there wasn't really anything that brought the two together. So we felt that there was an opportunity to create a holistic measure of prosperity, which led us to do that study.
And do you find in other nations, I'm assuming a lot of this information you gather is public information, but is there a lot of private information that goes into this that nations may or may not be willing to give you?
No, I mean, all of the data that we have in both our global and U.S. index are publicly available data. We do use some data that we purchase. So we use some of the Gallup data, which is Gallup World Poll. Gallup, as you may know, a sort of large survey organization that conducts surveys worldwide as well as in country, and we pay for some of their data in the index. But we don't do any of our own primary data collection. We're using sort of reliable sources that, such as the World Bank, IMF, international organizations that pull this data together. So credibility is really important to us in terms of the data that we use. And that's the other thing I think that we bring, which is a sort of impartiality. We have no, hidden agenda, or we're in the US, we're nonpartisan. We don't have any particular, side to bat for, as it were. So there's a kind of objectivity and impartiality that we can bring with our index that perhaps others struggle with, and particularly in nations where the quality of data within the country is often questioned, and we can come with something that gives an objective and truthful measure, we believe, of what's actually going on.
Well, and anyone who's taken a statistics class knows it's all in how you show the data. So having somebody who's impartial, who's not part of the political machinery, doesn't have an axe to grind, isn't trying to come out to a foregone conclusion, that's pretty rare. And I think you provide a valuable service.
Yes, that's what we want to do. Is we almost, if you like, let the data do the talking. And the tool is not a sufficient measure in itself, but it provides the foundation, the basis from which you can build upon. So you obviously need to use local knowledge and expertise as well to help kind of provide added color to what you're seeing through the index. But the beauty of the index is that it provides a data-driven approach. So sometimes people will do things because they have a sort of gut feel or an instinct. And I think, sometimes that can be good. Sometimes, actually, that can be misguided. And to use the index to help sort of say, okay, well, how are things now, and then how have they changed, can then provide the platform to be able to help you decide on what further action needs to be taken.
Well, in the U.S., we're always being bludgeoned by, these groups that are talking about income inequality, and that's all they ever focus on is income inequality. As you look at the results that you've drawn from this index, do you think there's a case to be made for that?
So what we do in the index is we actually look at that's in the living conditions pillar. We've got something called material resources as one of the elements. Mm. There, we look at the extent to the resources that people have. So it's sort of trying to capture those at the end of the spectrum that actually don't have sufficient. So through the index, we're trying to, rather than looking at those that have enough, we sort of do it the other way around, and then so you're negatively scored if you have a high proportion, for example, that are living living below the national poverty line. So every country has their own measure of poverty, and we capture that in the index. And we do that at state level as well, so you can see what's the percentage of people who are living below that poverty line. So if there is a high proportion, then yes, you will be negatively scored.
Hmm. Interesting. And can you look at, I haven't been able to delve into your site deeply, but can you look at could you look at the whole country just on that index, or is it all taken as a totality?
So you can, in the global index, you can look at the whole of the U.S. So the global index provides a sort of what's happening across the U.S. as a whole. But then the U.S. Prosperity Index looks at how does that translate into the 50 states and D.C. But I think, I may be wrong, I need to check because it's a while since I looked, I think we do also create a overall, so we've got the US Prosperity Index for each of the 50 states in DC. I think we create one of these profiles for the US as a whole as well.
Interesting. Well, I'm just curious because we have a lot of policy that winds up being driven by emotion. And, I mean, I'm sure every other country has that too. But, bottom line is if you're doing well, if you have a job and you're not living on the street or whatever, then because you have those things, other people are living on the street, which obviously anyone who thinks about it knows that's not true. We could all go live on the street and that wouldn't help anybody. So I think it's really important, and especially in California, I think that's going to be great if you look at each county individually, because I think it's going to be surprising for a lot of people. It's interesting with this pandemic because there are people trapped in big cities. We're all looking at it, trapped in big cities, and they're the ones with the big outbreak because they're all jammed in there together. And I think that at least here, the prevailing sentiment has been that, you know, it's better to live in a big city. We live out in the rural part of the state up in the north. And, you know, that we're, you know, kind of hillbillies. What are we doing up here? And now we're kind of looking at it going, it's good to be us.
you know. Well, I'm living in central London at the moment, with pretty much lockdown. So
you're in the sucks to be you category. We're sorry about
Although
that.
We are still allowed to go out and have one form of exercise a day. So I was able to go along a nice long walk with my wife today along the river and back. So we're not completely housebound, but it's pretty restricted.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Depending on where you are, we're getting into that weird space as well. We have to take a really quick break, and then we're going to come back. I can't believe it's gone so fast, darn it. So, Sean, when we come back with you, you know, all the things we forgot to ask you or that you wanted to share, it's totally you when we come back. So our guest is Sean Flanagan. Okay. You're listening to We the People Radio, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Although it's a great song, this isn't just about money, as we've learned. It's a whole index.
That's right.
It's a whole big index. So wealth isn't just money. Okay, so Sean, what have we... obviously, you do this for a living, so we've missed a lot since we've only been hanging out with you now for like 40 minutes. But what do you think people should know, and what can they learn from going maybe to your institute webpage, which is li.com? Am I right? Looks almost too simple. Yeah, lookoutaminstitute.com, so li.com. What else do people need to know? Uh-oh. We have him in the cone of silence. Sean is living in the cone of silence. We told him he could have the whole rest of the time all himself. And then the call dropped, so...
Yeah. There you have it. I was curious to know who was at the top of the index.
Countries.
Which countries, were at the top. I was surprised that the United States wasn't up there.
Well, I was curious if they ranked, like what he said, how they weight things, do they weight them for that place? Because comparing, like, the U.S., to Africa, comparing Europe to the U.S.
Yeah, I think he said that you know, you can't compare
an
open
that.
Economy to a country that doesn't have an open economy.
Oh, so forgot about that too.
They change the criteria to come up with a more.
Well, and then some of the places don't really. Well, like you could never do China because they don't give you any data, and what they do give you is fake. On a brief commercial note, one interesting thing that's happening during this pandemic, for those of you who are Second Amendment supporters, here's a brief Second Amendment update. Very interesting. There are a lot of our brethren out there who thought they never needed a firearm because what would they do with it? And the police are there to protect them, so they don't need it. That's silly. Very interesting. There are a lot of people who are super frustrated that they cannot find firearms on the internet.
Yeah, they can't buy online.
Yeah, they can't buy them online.
When did that happen?
Huh. Yeah, so that's been a lie on the gun show loophole. Whoops, that's not there either.
And how come you got to wait 10 days?
I know.
I mean, what's that? When did that happen?
Just in case you thought the whole thing was a complete waste of time, there are some interesting educational things happening. Okay, Sean's back.
Yeah.
Right. Hello. Sorry.
Hey, there he is.
No worries. Well, we kind of gypped you now, but we're curious. Like, what things do people need to know? They can go to li.com and learn things, I'm sure.
They can, or they can actually go to the dedicated U.S. website, which is usprosperity.net, and they can get a profile on the individual state, and they can, you know, look at how the state's performing across the different 11 pillars of prosperity, and then unpick that even further. So, I mean, one of the things that might be worthwhile is just giving a bit of an overview of California, given that's where we are, and might be helpful for listeners based on, I don't know, would that help?
Sure.
Yeah.
Because people have to hear about California, even if they don't live there. They have to hear about it all the time, so you might as well throw it out there.
Absolutely. So when we look at California, it actually sits pretty much bang in the middle of the index, so it's 24th out of 51. But interestingly, like the rest of the U.S., it's seen an improvement in its prosperity over the past decade, but it's actually outperformed the U.S. as a whole and has therefore risen up the rankings 8 places. So 10 years ago, it was 32nd. It's now 24th. So it's had quite a sort of meteoric rise over that time. And it's seen pretty much an improvement across the board. So the open economies domain has seen a big improvement. It's moved up 12 places on that particular aspect. And in particular, it's the economic quality where there's biggest improvement. So it's gone up 28 ranking places in the rankings, up to 6th place now. And economic quality is made up of a number of different things. One is around fiscal sustainability, so that's the extent to which the state can support itself in the event of a sort of crisis in terms of, you know, Federal Reserves and how many days, et cetera, what's the sort of budget to expenditure or expenditure to income ratio. We then look at dynamism. This is the extent to which new businesses are being attracted, so entrepreneurship, startups, are they surviving? It's actually ranked first on that particular aspect. So it has actually seen quite a big improvement on a number of the different aspects of economic quality. The one area where it hasn't improved so much is around labor force engagement. So this looks at the extent to which the workforce is sort of active in the in the employment arena. So we look at adult unemployment, youth unemployment. We look at things like labor force participation. So the youth unemployment in California is still reasonably high. It's at 9.3%. And also the labor force participation, it's seen a slight deterioration there. So on that particular element, it's still ranking 43rd. So whilst it's seen an improvement in a number of those particular areas of economic quality, that's one area where it hasn't. And then we also see an improvement in governance. Governance looks at the extent to which a state is sort of well-managed, political accountability, rule of law, and the rule of law has seen an improvement. So that measures things around the transparency of the judiciary, you know, the fairness of the judiciary. It's moved up 12 places in the rankings. And on government integrity, it's actually moved up from 42nd in the rankings to 16th, and that's particularly we see around reductions in certain aspects of corruption. Corruption measures have improved. And then as we move into the empowered people domain, we see that health in California, where it ranks 4th at the moment overall out of 52, so 51, so it does particularly well. Behavioral risk factors, so that's where we look at aspects of health that are sort of indications of that there are, you know, health is an issue. So we look at things like obesity, we look at smoking, we look at sort of high use of alcohol and sort of drugs as well. But California ranks 2nd there. So there are other aspects of health. I'm slightly conscious of time. But in terms of improvements, if we just look at those quickly, there are a certain number of the pillars. So market access and infrastructure, where California ranks 43rd. When you look across the different elements, we look at things like communication. So things around like internet access, high-speed internet access in particular, and ultra-fast internet availability, it doesn't do quite so well.
No, because we have lots of areas that still don't have that.
No, exactly. And I think that's a particular challenge for the state. And so, yeah, that's why it sort of doesn't score as well. The resources aspect particularly looks at the availability, supply, and reliability of electricity. And again, that's where we see in California it's not doing as well as other states. And then the final aspect is transport, so the infrastructure. So it seems to have sort of good bus route coverage, but when you look at the availability and access to roads and the quality of those roads and bridges, not as good as other states. So it actually, that's why it comes out of 43rd. Social capital is one of those areas which we haven't talked about, which is very interesting, and this is almost like the glue which holds society together. So this is the strength of relationships, personal, family, friends, but also trust in institutions, trust in each other, and also the extent to which people participate and engaged in the civic society. So volunteering, sort of members of religious organizations and also non-religious organizations, sports and social clubs and things. It's 44th California for overall for social capital. The one area that we sort of touched on a little bit, which might be good to finish on, is living conditions. So there, where we're looking at the extent to which people have enough resources, they have sort of, availability of good water services, but they also have connectedness. Again, that's another area where we measure things like internet access and availability, rural, urban, broadband. The one area where I think that pulls California down to 38 on living conditions is around the shelter aspect, and that's where we measure things like available affordable housing, homelessness, the sort of rough sleeping, overcrowding. It probably doesn't come as a surprise that California overall,
depending on where you are, that's
on that one.
Yeah, it's kind of a mushroom cloud at this point, depending on the city.
Yeah, but when you look at California state as a whole, and there are obviously pockets where San Francisco, I believe has quite high levels of homelessness, and so. Mm-hmm. But when you spread that out across the state, it comes out 51st on that element. So there's a number of areas I've talked through very rapidly there, Bill and Erin, that I've sort of where California's doing well, but there are also a number of areas where it could improve. And there is so much more that the index and the state profile can tell people about California. So just encourage people to go and have a look.
Oh yeah, and so when do you think your county assessment will be available?
We should be publishing it around the end of July.
Oh,
obviously,
wow.
With things currently at the moment, we were hoping to be able to get out to the U.S. In fact, I was due back there. We did a two-week tour of the sort of East Coast, as it were, cutting across to Atlanta and Texas. We were coming back, and we were going to start in California, go into sort of Colorado, and then go up to Montana at the end of April. But unfortunately, it's all been put on hold. But we're very hopeful to get back out there as soon as we can. We're keen to get out there to engage with people, promote the index.
Because at this point, you're lucky to just get out and walk your dog.
Exactly.
Much less tour the U.S.
Yeah. True.
Hey, Sean, real quick, who's number one? What country is probably the highest on the index?
Bill, you're killing me.
Oh, on the global one?
Yes.
On the global one, it's Norway. So the
Norway.
Scandinavian countries.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Well, my only song that has any kind of British flavor was the Pink Panther, so I guess we thought we'd play that on your outgoing.
I love the Pink Floyd song Money, though, as well. That's a great tune. So.
I thought that was useful. Thank you, Mr. Sean Flanagan
from
the
Legatum
Institute.
On.
We really appreciate you coming on, and you can find all of his information at li.com, which is about the easiest website we've ever given out. And you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks for having me on, Bill and Erin. It's a pleasure. Thank you.